then there was one. The one and only Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of this here podcast, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, your host with electronic engineering in my heart and cybersecurity on my mind. In this week's podcast, we're tackling security on a whole bunch of fronts, from Qualcomm's newest fingerprint technology rolled out at Mobile World Congress Shanghai this week, to stemming the rising tide of IP theft, and how we, the semiconductor industry, can combat this global problem. First, ultrasonic fingerprints. And no, I'm not referring to that one James Bond movie. You know the one. Nope, what I am talking about is Qualcomm's announcement this week that they are rolling out brand new features in their Snapdragon Sense ID fingerprint technology. So, what makes this fingerprint detection technology so special? First, it's embedded under the screen itself, instead of that little button. And yes, I am on board with that. These new Qualcomm fingerprint sensors can work under glass, metal, and of course, displays. And they can also recognize swipes in different directions. And get this, they also can detect heartbeat and blood flow. Phew. Take that, zombie hordes trying to hack into my phone. Qualcomm has that covered, thank you. And as a total bonus, these sensors also can work underwater. So there's that. Okay, so why is this so cool? Sure, fingerprint technology has been around for a long time, but this one is making a splash. Get it? Splash? Because that underwater business. Anyway, well, these new sensors don't necessarily have to be paired with Qualcomm processors. So that's helpful to other manufacturers. Apple, perhaps. I don't know. But these new sensors are specifically designed to work with OLED displays. So that does narrow down the field a little bit. But manufacturers aside, it's the technology at play here that I find so interesting and intriguing for the future of security in mobile devices and technology as a whole. So, this is how it works. Ultrasonic waves are used to map out the ridges of a fingerprint, and then those waves bounce back, and then they communicate to the sensor whose fingerprint it is. It can also capture a 3D image of the fingerprint as well, which makes it way more secure than the capacitive 2D touch sensing technology used today. Now, we've talked about ultrasonic technology here on Fish Fry a couple times before, but this announcement, I believe, is the first real inroad for this revolutionary new technology to really take hold in our technological ecosystem. Now, speaking of our technological ecosystem, let's get to the real meat of today's broadcast, intellectual property theft and how we can stop it. Let me bring in David Locke Hall, author of Crack 99, The Takedown of 100 Million Chinese Software Pirate, and Ted Morocco, CEO of SmartFlow Compliance Solutions, to talk about all of this and more. My guests today are Ted Morocco and David Locke Hall. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Happy to be here.
So both of you have quite unique views of IP theft, software piracy, and cybersecurity. So let's start off with you, Ted. Please tell me and my audience about your company, SmartFlow Compliance Solutions, and where you guys fit in the sphere.
Thank you. So SmartFlow is a cybersecurity company that's really focused on identifying pirated software and finding the evidence to identify who's stealing the software, how it's been cracked, and where it's being used and by whom. So we started the company about 3 years ago based on experience at another startup company that I was involved in where we had a high piracy rate. And we had developed a lot of the technology with that prior company to try to identify this kind of piracy. And SmartFlow is our effort to bring this to other developers of high-value software.
So, Dave, you recently wrote a book entitled Crack 99, The Takedown of $100 Million Chinese Software Pirate. So, tell my audience a bit about yourself and more about the research going into this book.
Sure. Well, I'm a private attorney now, but I was, for 23 years, I was a federal prosecutor with the U.S. Department of Justice and retired from that career in 2013. And I wrote the book shortly after my retirement. And the book is about, it's a first-person account of really my last investigation and prosecution in the government, which was of a Chinese software pirate named Zhang Li, who was operating a website called Crack 99 from China, from Zhangdu, China, and selling stolen, mostly U.S. software on that website.
Okay, so both of you are on a panel discussion at this year's Design Automation Conference called Your Intellectual Property Has Been Stolen, Now What? How the Semiconductor Industry Can Combat This Global Problem. So I have to ask, Ted, how in the heck is the semi industry going to deal with this giant IP stealing elephant in the room? I think IP theft is happening a lot, and I don't think we really talk about it enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes a multi-layered approach to really solve this problem. So I think one of the things you really need to do is focus on security. Hacking is in the news a lot today. Hacking into sophisticated organizations that are developing these semiconductors is a lot easier than most people think. You think the tech community is very secure, but anywhere where there are human beings involved and USB ports that are exposed, you can get in, and you can get in about 5 minutes. So there really are two kinds of companies out there, those that have been hacked and know about it, and those that have just been hacked and don't know about it. So security is important, but it's not going to solve it. And we've seen the same thing in the software industry with license managers. You know, people have come up with more and more powerful encryption algorithms to try to lock down the software. Inevitably, it's cracked, and it shows up in usually a couple days after it's released on websites like Crack 99. People in China and Russia and other places are selling very expensive software that's taken, you know, hundreds of man years to develop for pennies on the dollar. So we're really focused on trying to gather the evidence and track the distribution of these licenses and try to find out, you know, how it's being distributed, where it's going, and who's using it, because ultimately you need evidence. That's going to come from technology. So it's a technological problem, but it's a technological solution. And I'm not going to tell you everything we do to catch people, but we're constantly trying to stay a couple steps ahead of the people who are populating these websites like Crack 99.
All right, Dave, on the legal side of things, how do you think companies can help themselves with their battles with IP theft? Should they just wait around and wait for the government to bail them out?
No, they shouldn't do that. You know, one of the admonitions in my book is that I think the government should be doing more to combat this problem and should be elevating the theft of technology and IP to a higher priority level within the law enforcement community. You know, in terms of job owning, the government has done that, but it has not done it in terms of action. So I do hope that the government will pick up pace, but it would be naive for any of us to think that the government's going to solve this problem. And one of the reasons for that is that we look at the government, we see it hasn't solved its own problem. So it's not really in a position to fix it for everybody else. So while on the one hand, I think the government should be doing more in terms of law enforcement and should be doing more in terms of diplomacy and pressuring countries that don't have the same IP protections that we do to try to conform to our standards, in the end, it's going to be the victims are going to have to solve the problem. And I agree with Ted that just as technology has created some of these issues, technology is probably going to resolve them in a lot of ways. Other steps that can be taken is, you're asking me from a lawyer's point of view, litigation, you know, aggressive investigation of theft, just like companies would do in a tangible context, you know, if somebody's stealing money or physical objects. Typically, what follows is an investigation and then litigation. And I think that is the right approach. There are a lot of difficulties in that in this context because the internet makes perpetrators anonymous, somewhat anonymous, and they're protected by international borders. And that definitely makes things harder, but it doesn't make it impossible.
All right, one last question for you, Ted. The future here, what are we looking like? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse, especially in IP theft?
That's a tough one. that really is a tough one. I like to think it's going to get better. I can say that from personal experience with SmartFlow, we have seen companies that were reluctant to really take on this piracy issue for fear that they might offend companies that might be running, you know, crack copies. They have a different attitude today. And I think that the fact that a lot of these cracked software products have malware or the potential for malware makes responsibility on the supplier to actually talk to their customers about the fact that there may be malware on their network and that they know about it. Because these things, if you download it from a site like Crack99, you do not know what you're getting. There could be a Trojan in there. There could be a backdoor into that network that allows them to open the floodgates and steal project files and a lot of valuable intellectual property. So legitimate companies don't want any of this cracked software on their networks. And they can't control their employees because there are rogue employees that will install things that aren't supposed to be on the network that haven't been checked and haven't been paid for. So I think attitudes are changing. I think eyes are opening, but there's still a tremendous amount of vulnerability. So I think it's progress, but it's slow progress.
Excellent. Well, on that note, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Ted and Dave.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Amelia.
Great to be here.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. Yes, hosted by yours truly. And also by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at Amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 30th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.